Matthew chapter 27. Matthew chapter 27. We're going to read several verses, beginning in verse 15. It says, "Now at that feast, the governor was wont to release unto the people a prisoner whom they would. And they had then a notable prisoner called Barabbas. Therefore, when they were gathered together, Pilate said unto them, Whom will ye that I release unto you, Barabbas or Jesus, which is called Christ? For he knew that for envy they had delivered him. When he was set down on the judgment seat, his wife sent to him, saying, Have thou nothing to do with that just man, for I have suffered many things this day in a dream because of him. But the chief priests and elders persuaded the multitude that they should ask Barabbas and destroy Jesus. The governor answered and said unto them, Whether of the twain will ye that I release unto you? And they said, Barabbas. Pilate said unto them, What shall I then do with Jesus, which is called the Christ? And they said unto him, Let him be crucified. And the governor said, Why? What evil hath he done? But they cried out the more, saying, When Pilate saw that he could prevail nothing, but that rather the tumult was made, he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this just person. See ye to it. Then answered all the people and said, His blood be on us and on our children. Then released he Barabbas unto them, and when he had scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified. Now we've already covered verses 15 through 23. We just really needed to read it again in order to have a little context. Let me just remind you of the situation with Barabbas. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago when we were together, and the story is basically that in order to relieve tensions between the Jews and the Romans who occupied them, there was a custom had developed that was really an effort essentially to kind of throw a bone to the Jews each year during their most celebrated week, which was the Passover week. And what they agreed to do, the Roman government would just simply release a Jewish prisoner that was in their custody, basically willing to drop all charges and whatever had been brought against them, and release them to the Jewish people. In other words, giving them their freedom. It could even be a criminal that was already convicted and already sentenced to death. If he fell at the right time, and that's what the Jews asked, if that's who they asked for, then they would release him. And that was just a custom that had developed. Now, Pilate is using this at this point. I just remind you that this is really just a last-ditch effort that he is making to not have to condemn Jesus, because he knew he was an innocent man, but also not have the blame on him. If Jesus was released, the religious Jews would be blaming him. And so he's trying to shift the blame on the multitude. He's thinking, okay, if I offer to them this murderer, Barabbas, or Jesus, which one do you want me to release? Well, surely they'll go with the innocent guy, the good guy, Jesus. Surely they wouldn't want a murderer released to them. He's really in hopes that this massive crowd, many of them who would probably still be in favor of Jesus, would unanimously say, oh yeah, release Jesus to us. And then the religious Jews who were wanting Jesus crucified would be able to say, well, it's not Pilate's fault. The people wanted him. And so they would walk away. But that didn't work. By this time, the scripture tells us that the priest and the elders had done a very effective job of winning the crowd over, winning the multitude. Apparently, they campaigned. Verse 20 tells us that they persuaded them to ask for Barabbas instead of Jesus. So they, whatever they did, they had a small campaign amongst the multitude and really had them do the most unlikely thing, which was ask for Barabbas to be released instead of Jesus. Barabbas was a bad guy. He was a real criminal. He was a robber. He was a murderer. He was a mover of sedition, the scripture says. And he deserved to be where he was. He deserved to be locked up and probably was deserving of the death penalty. But Jesus, on the other hand, was completely innocent, hadn't done no wrong, and was no risk to the public in any way. But because now the leaders who hated Jesus so much, because they had now created kind of a mob out of the multitude, now the multitude's crying for Jesus to be crucified. And so it's a terrible injustice, adding to all the other injustices that already taken place. And so the crucifixion of Jesus is kind of set in stone here. Now the Pilate he's run out of options. He knows Jesus is innocent, but so he's faced with the choice. Either he can man up and do what's right and release Jesus anyway, or he can do the cowardly thing and acquiesce the crowd, basically, and in order to not bring any hardship upon himself. And of course, he does the latter. He decides that he would yield to the crowd. Verse 24 says, when Pilate saw that he could prevail nothing, in other words, he's run out of options, but that rather a tumult was being made, he took water and he washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this just person. See ye to it. Now, no amount of symbolic washing of the hands was going to relieve him of his responsibility. That's a waste of time, okay? But perhaps in his mind, this would absolve him of any complicity in the eyes of the public. In other words, he's giving testimony that he didn't agree with the charges of Jesus, but yet he's still going to allow him to be crucified, okay? As we've already discussed, Pilate was in a position where he could not afford to have another uprising or riot of any kind in his district. Extra biblical records, as we've already talked about several lessons ago, extra biblical records show that there had been a previous tumult or riot of some kind that had landed him in hot water with Caesar. And so he's kind of treading, he's on thin ice as it is, and another one could cost him his job, perhaps even cost him his life. And so that's a chance that he wasn't willing to take. And so he's done this. There's a bit of irony in the fact that he washes his hands. He's actually exercising a Jewish ritual that finds its roots in the Mosaic Law. The Mosaic Law, it reads that if there was a Jewish city or a Jewish community that was unable to solve a murder, the powers that be, the elders or whatever, were not able to identify the culprit and bring him to justice, then they would ceremonially wash their hands publicly, and that would be absolving them of any guilt in the matter. In other words, the blood of the murdered victim was not on their hands. They couldn't find out the culprit, and so it was really just a symbolic ritual relieving them of any responsibility because they didn't bring anybody to justice, okay? In this case, it's probably intentionally that Pilate uses something that would be familiar to them, this ritual or this symbolic gesture. But in this case, there was something he could do. He could have very well done the right thing and said, no, I'm not going to convict this innocent man. I'm certainly not going to allow him to be crucified because of your charges, because I find no guilt in him. But and this, he wouldn't do that, okay? And so he certainly is not innocent of as he says he is, okay? He knew that if he didn't do something with Jesus, that he felt like he was going to have a lot of trouble, okay? So in verse 24, he calls Jesus a just man. I'm innocent, and what you do with this just man? And he claims he claims innocence, but he's not innocent. And he says this. He says, "You see to it." Now, actually, in actuality, by putting Jesus, as he's about to do, into the hands of his Roman soldiers, he's seeing to it. Okay, he tells the Jews, you see to it. But he's seeing to it himself. But from an official standpoint, he has absolved himself of wrongdoing in the eyes by declaring that, hey, I'm not in agreement with these charges. And he's basically making a public declaration that the responsibility is going to fall on the Jews. Now watch what they say in verse 25. Then answered all the people and said, his blood be on us and on our children. So amazingly, the Jews are willing to say, okay, we take responsibility. It's really amazing because they were supposed to be the law in as far as Jewish law went. And they're saying, yeah, we take responsibility, even though they knew Jesus was innocent. But it's not going to be very long before it becomes apparent that they only meant this for a moment. Several months later, after Jesus has risen again and he's ascended to heaven and the early church goes to work and the apostles begin to preach the gospel far and wide. We find all of this begins in the book of Acts, and as you proceed through each chapter, the gospel spreading further and they're doing a greater job of reaching the world around them. And and you get over to chapter 5 and the apostles get arrested, and because of their preaching of the gospel, they get arrested and they get locked up, and then the Lord miraculously allows them to break free from prison. The next day, the elders, the high priest and the elders, gathered them up again and said, hey, we told you to not be preaching in this guy's name. And here are the words they said in Acts chapter 5 and verse 28. Behold, ye have filled Jerusalem with your doctrine and intend to bring this man's blood upon us. Now remember what they said back here in our text? They said his blood be upon us. They themselves owned up to it, said to be upon us, not only us, but our children that follow us. Now a few months later, they don't want that. So it was just more lip service than anything. So much for his blood be on our children. Whether they meant it at that time or not, is hard to say, but it's very likely they didn't mean it at all. But it was just what Pilate wanted to hear, because at that he says, okay, I'm good, and he carries out their wishes in verse 26. Then released he Barabbas unto them. That's the great injustice. Got this murderer, this robber, this criminal, this danger to society, and they're content to let him go free and walk amongst them. And when he had scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified. Okay, I'm sure you've read about this or heard about this before. Perhaps I've even taught about it before. But let me describe a little bit what was involved with the scourging of an individual according to Roman practices. Okay, the whip itself would have consisted of a very short wooden handle. That handle would have had several leather straps attached to it, a certain length, long enough that it could be used to lash somebody. At the end of those leather straps would be sharp, either metal or bone, something at the tip of those straps, something that would cut, okay, bone or steel or whatever, glass. And the person that was being whipped would be tied to a post with their arms outstretched as far as possible, actually leaving their legs dangling. And the purpose of that was to keep their back and their torso extremely tight for the whipping, okay? And there would, in most cases, there would be two different scourgers. There'd be one on each side behind him, and they would take take turns or alternate on giving him the victim lashes, okay? And of course, the target of the lashes would be the back of the victim. But because there are many of these cords attached, there would be some overlapping, okay? That would reach over into the shoulders, the neck, the buttocks area. But the target was the middle, but it would cover the surrounding area. And the severity of damage done to the body could vary from instance to instance, depending on one, how many lashes he would be given, two, how accurately they were applied. 3, how brutal the scourge itself had been designed. If it was extremely brutal, it would leave more damage, okay? But in the very least, if a person took a scourging, in the very least, the skin and the muscles would be lacerated on the back, leaving the victim covered in blood, but it could go to a far greater extreme than that. It could go enough that the veins and arteries could be severed. Even the major organs, it could be get so bad. Imagine this; it's gross to talk about. But even the major organs could be exposed and damaged. In other words, the victim's torso could be laid open in the back to where the kidneys and the spleen were exposed, where they could be ruptured or lacerated. And so, as one would expect, oftentimes the victims of a scourging would actually die even before they reached their assigned method of execution. Of course, in Jesus' case, we know that didn't happen. And it was not uncommon. You take with somebody begins, their organs begin to be lacerated. Obviously, they're going to die fairly quickly. We know that with Jesus, we don't know how extreme it became. We know it was brutal. But the fact that he didn't die means that it wasn't as brutal as it could have been. We do know that by the time it came for him to carry his cross, it was apparent, it appears that he was not strong enough to do so, because they petitioned Simon the Cyrenian he was recruited to carry the cross for him. So that implies that Jesus was not physically able to do that, or they would have made him. And so all of this is very horrible. It's hard to think about. But it was the price that was paid, okay, for redemption. The price Jesus had to pay, and the price that he was willing to pay. And his blood was shed. Obviously, his death was the ultimate atonement for sins. But the bloodshed was involved with the whole thing, okay? Jesus was not guilty of anything. You and I know that. We've talked about it. There was no evidence to the contrary ever presented by anyone. No valid evidence was ever presented, because he was not guilty. He was not guilty of even the smallest sin in his life. But the reality of it is, there was a guilty verdict that day. Not just to Jesus, but there was a legitimate guilty verdict. The Jewish leaders were guilty of falsely accusing the Son of God. The multitude was guilty of falling in with them and asking for Barabbas to be released to them instead of Jesus. Herod, which we talked about, this text doesn't talk about that, but you'll remember there was a detour taken where he was briefly taken before Herod. Herod is guilty of ridiculing the King of Kings. If you remember, they put the robe on him, and his soldiers ridiculed him. Pilate, which is the authority in this text, was guilty of allowing his execution to be scheduled. He thinks he's not guilty, but he was guilty. He's the one that allowed him to be turned over to be crucified. And if you and I would have been allowed to peer into the spiritual realm that day, every single one of us would have been guilty also. What would we be guilty of? We would be guilty of the sins that had to be atoned for that day, okay? So everybody, every single human being on the planet Earth, that day, from that day forward, was guilty too. So there was a guilty verdict that day, folks. And Jesus was given a guilty verdict, but he was not guilty, but we were. Okay, so the next time we're together, we're going to see the brutality of how Jesus was treated leading up to the cross. And of course, the hanging upon the cross involved a lot of brutality. So it's not anything pretty over the next few studies, but it's something that has to be studied. And we can look at it as a being grateful for Jesus willing to do it, okay, for our salvation. Appreciate you guys very much. We'll go ahead and stand and be dismissed in a word of prayer. Hope that you can be here for the services tomorrow for Tammy's dad. And if not, you ought to give her a text or a call or something. Reach out to her. Let her know that you're praying for her and her family, okay? All right.